You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Al-Sayed is a small Bedouin village in Israel where everyone speaks a unique sign language. Until recently, no one outside the community had ever bothered to learn it. In Marguerite Fox's new book, Talking Hands, What Sign Language Reveals About the Mind, she describes her visit to Al-Sayed with four scientists to decode this language and discern what every language has in common, even when they're as different as the one in Al-Sayed. Her book is published by Simon & Schuster, and I'm very pleased to welcome her to the show. Hello.
Thank you very much. Hello.
Now, I said Al-Sayed is in Israel, but where in Israel?
I could tell you, but I'd have to kill you. The international team of scientists who have been studying this language for the past half dozen years or so are necessarily very, very protective of the privacy of the villagers they're studying.
Because they're afraid it'll become contaminated, polluted?
For ethical reasons, based on long-standing scientific tradition, number one. Number two, because I think when I broached the idea of this book to them 6 years ago, they had nightmare visions of busloads of camera-waving tourists blundering through the village. And so one of the conditions I agreed to, happily, to be allowed to write the book was that I would disguise the precise location of the village. So we can say only it's somewhere in Israel.
But I'd imagine people come upon it, and they must be surprised by the unique situation there.
To my knowledge, it's not the kind of place you can find on your own. It is virtually not on any map, and to get there, you turn right at the last vestige of Western imperial civilization, which is, guess what, at the world's largest McDonald's, standing on this windblown, dusty corner with nothing else in sight. You go down a twisting labyrinth of narrower and narrower unmarked dirt paths to get to the village. So it is isolated.
Okay, so their secret is safe, and I'm not going there. What about the demographics of this town? How has its geographical separation contributed to the high rate of deafness?
Well, it is the geographical situation and tradition and isolation all in one combination. And because of isolation, because people rarely marry outside the community, and because there is intermarriage, people usually are married to a second, third, or fourth cousin of some sort, the gene pool of the community has become fairly tightly circumscribed over time. And as a result, a form of inherited deafness has been passed down in this community for three generations, for the last 70 years, and it is now something like 40 times the rate in conventional society in either Israel or the U.S.
Now, deafness genes are recessive, aren't they? So you're still, a lot of deaf people are going to have children who hear.
There are many different ways to become deaf, including aging, accident, the non-heritable ways. Of the heritable ways, scientists have identified close to 100 ways. Some are dominant, some are recessive. It happens that in this village, as in most other signing villages, and there are a few others going in the world, the form of inherited deafness turns out to be recessive.
In fact, there's even one in Martha's Vineyard, isn't there?
Historically, it hasn't been alive since probably World War II. There is a beautiful book published by Harvard by a woman named Nora Grossi, G-R-O-C-E, called Everyone Here Spoke Sign Language, about a similar indigenous sign language that grew up on its own in two adjacent villages in Martha's Vineyard in the 18th and 19th centuries.
So does everyone in Al-Sayed speak sign language, even hearing children of hearing parents?
Well, I should add, by the way, the name of the village, it's spelled Al-Sayed in Roman letters. However, as I learned in the local dialect, it's pronounced Es-Sayed. In Es-Sayed, there are today about 3,500 residents, about 150 of whom are deaf. And again, the conventional rate of deafness in the population is one person in 1,000. Here it's something like one in 25. So obviously all of the 150 deaf people use the indigenous sign language because no spoken language is accessible to them. In addition, a great many of the hearing villagers, and we're talking hundreds of people, are essentially bilingual in spoken Arabic and the village sign language. Why? Because, as you say, the gene for deafness is recessive. It's therefore somewhat atomized in the community. And so the feeling has been for three generations that anyone in the community can potentially have a deaf child, a deaf sibling, a deaf cousin, a deaf neighbor, a deaf friend, and therefore spontaneously and with no outside intervention, huge numbers of hearing villagers use the sign language as well.
What are the differences between growing up bilingual in two spoken languages and growing up bilingual in a spoken and a sign language?
To my knowledge, the only real difference, the only significant difference, is the medium in which the language is realized. Where spoken language is delivered in the auditory vocal channel, produced by mouth and received by ear, all sign languages, including this village one, are delivered in the manual visual channel, produced by the movement of hands and the body in space and received by eye. And so bilingual villagers simply are bilingual on the one hand in the auditory vocal channel and on the other in the manual visual channel.
Do Noam Chomsky's theories about learning languages apply to, and forgive me for not remembering the real pronunciation of this, Al-Sayed? El-Sayed?
Es-Sayed.
Es-Sayed. Okay, I'll try to remember that, like Edward Said. What about Noam Chomsky?
Well, that is the $64,000 question. Since a young Turk named Chomsky came blazing onto the intellectual scene in the late 1950s, it has become widely accepted that men and women come into the world hardwired for language, to put it in modern terms. We come with an innate language instinct, as Steven Pinker calls it, much like the instinct of birds to migrate or of spiders to spin webs. And one of the things that has riveted the attention of linguists since then is, what does this inborn linguistic blueprint consist of? What, to put it in, again, electronic terms, how would you map this innate wiring for language that we all have? And the fascinating thing about signing villages like Es-Sayed is you have a naturally occurring experiment where, as one of the linguists in my book says, a linguist normally never gets the opportunity to see a human language being born. Why? Because all spoken languages like English are many thousands of years old, and even new languages like spoken Creoles come from parent languages that themselves are thousands of years old. So only in a sign language situation will a linguist get the chance to see a language born. And the reason is, if you get a deaf community, as you have in Es-Sayed, spontaneously and naturally, language will come out on the hands. And to the deaf community, there are no spoken languages in the environment that are accessible. So voila, a language born of nothing more than our innate instinct to make language.
My guest is Margalit Fox, a reporter for the New York Times. She's written a book called Talking Hands, and it is published by Simon & Schuster. Well, how old is this indigenous sign language?
The first deaf children were born in Es-Sayed 70 years ago, 9 or 10 of them in one generation. And those deaf kids started swapping and sharing and pooling the spontaneous gestures that they had innovated to communicate with their hearing families. Linguists call these gestures home signs. And within one generation, you suddenly had their children being exposed to this nascent sign language from the cradle, acquiring it natively. So this first generation of home signs, which functioned like a sort of manual pidgin, suddenly became a manual Creole, that is, a full-blown sign language.
Do all sign languages have certain things in common? I'd imagine that you make pictures with your hands in some cases. I've seen it, people who do American Sign Language. Did that occur here as well?
Well, certainly all sign languages necessarily have their origins in mimetic gesture, and so there are some obvious mimetic things that sign language tend to share the world over. That said, the diversity of signs from one world sign language to another is amazing. And also, it should be pointed out, the diversity of languages. Many, many people ask me, and these are educated people talking, so do all deaf people around the world speak the same sign language or what? And the answer is no. Nearly every country has its own national sign language. There are probably over 100 in the world. And while they certainly may have some surface features in common, each one is different from the next.
I've always wondered why British Sign Language is different from American Sign Language. After all, to some degree, they do rely on the same base language, don't they?
No, they don't. And again, this is a fallacy that very, very, even very educated hearing people routinely make. American Sign Language is not in any way English on the hands. It is a full, robust language in its own right.
Well, they do spell out words sometimes.
Right. Just as we might spell out foreign words, they use their finger spelling, the manual alphabet, to spell borrowed words. But if you look at the basic grammar of American Sign Language, it's very different from that of English. It has a different syntax. Sentences are formed in a different order. Let me give you one example from the book. Just as in English, ASL has a lot of compound words, words that historically came from two words that have coalesced into one. But if you look at some of the compounds, as we discuss in the book, they're completely unfamiliar to speakers of English. There's one ASL compound, think plus marry. Think marry. What does that mean? It means believe. Face new. Stranger. And my favorite one, nude, and the sign for zoom off, nude zoom off, is a streaker. That came into the language, needless to say, in the 1970s.
They have, ASL has its own grammar and its own syntax. What about the language at SAID?
That, again, is what the linguists have devoted many years to studying and have gotten many grants to study, and I hope will continue to get many more. Their preliminary findings and some findings beyond that are mentioned at the end of the book, so I don't want to tip my hand too much, but I will tell you that they went into the community as the first outsiders ever to spend any time with the language and the first people to try to decipher it. They went in not knowing what to expect or even knowing for certain if it was a full, robust language and not just a kind of threadbare pidgin. Happily, it is a full, rich, thriving language. Through just three generations. That's the amazing thing, and it owes that to nothing more than humankind's ability to make language.
Margaret Fox is my guest. She's written a book called Talking Hands. On the cover it says, in a remote village where everyone speaks sign language, scientists are discovering the essential ingredients of all human language and uncovering the workings of the human mind. The book is published by Simon & Schuster. We will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Marguerite Fox, who's written a book called Talking Hands, published by Simon & Schuster. Now, you write obituaries at the New York Times, don't you?
I do, indeed.
So how did you come to this? Did you study linguistics before you got into the newspaper business?
My original training was to be an academic linguist, and so my bachelor's degrees and one of my master's degrees are in linguistics. I stumbled into this book by pure good luck. I was having dinner 6 years ago with my longtime mentor, the distinguished linguist Mark Aronoff, who teaches at Stony Brook, and I was kvetching about how I wanted to write a book on language for a general readership, but couldn't find a topic. And Mark, out of the blue, said, come with us to the desert. And I said, desert? What desert? And that was when he told me that he and an international team of linguists, two from America, two from Israel, had been working basically in secret in this remote Bedouin village called Asayid.
How did your background in linguistics influence the way you reported on the village? Were you strictly a reporter, or were you participating in the research?
I was strictly a reporter, and in fact, my activities were so severely curtailed. I had to agree to many conditions that I normally wouldn't, and that no reporter in her right mind probably should, because I would not have been able to do the book otherwise. So I was allowed to go along on one three-day research trip only. The team of scientists goes a couple times a year, and I was, by a prearrangement, backed up into a corner with my notebook and saying absolutely nothing but simply writing down everything I saw, and when I came back from the trip, I had 80 pages of single-spaced notes.
How did the people in the village respond to being the subjects of a scientific inquiry?
Well, one of the themes that threads through the book, and I really find it quite moving, is the heroes of the book are really these four scientists who are coming into the village. It's very delicate in terms of cultural understanding and diplomacy and being accepted, and it really is the story of the villagers going from being a little bit wary of the scientists and their motive, though always polite and welcoming.
Would it have helped if some of the scientists were Arabs?
It's not clear. I think the only salient distinction for an isolated community like this is, are you a member of the community or are you an outsider? It's them and everybody else. But by the end of our narrative, even by the end of my trip, as you see in the book, the linguists went from being slightly distrusted outsiders to being truly accepted by the community.
I wonder what would happen if someone who spoke Arabic Sign Language or Hebrew Sign Language were to come in contact with one of these people.
That has happened, and it's absolutely fascinating. When you are claiming to have found an indigenous sign language that arose spontaneously, of course you have to address questions of potential influence. And indeed, there is a national Israeli sign language spoken by deaf Israelis. There is nearby Jordanian sign language, which you sometimes see in translation on Israeli television. And fascinatingly, when the linguists first went on a trip to a Said, they videotaped a bunch of deaf villagers telling stories in sign language. They went back to the University of Haifa, where the project is based, and they screened the videos for some deaf Israelis whom they use as language consultants. These deaf Israelis had absolutely no idea what was being said. So, or pretty much questions of influence were laid to rest then and there.
In this country, there's been a debate over sign language. First of all, whether it really is a language, and then also in some parts of the deaf community, it's felt that if people speak sign language, then they won't learn how to speak with their vocal cords. This is probably not an issue in this community.
In this community, it's not an issue, but it certainly is in the West. And as you say, historically, ASL was completely marginalized by hearing educators and even, as you say, by many deaf people themselves, because deaf people had been made to feel ashamed for so long of being deaf and using sign language. It's all about power.
And it led to a student rebellion at Gallaudet.
That's right, in 1988, the Deaf President Now debate. And what's fascinating is the whole field of sign language study is so new. American Sign Language, the most studied of the world's sign languages, has only been determined to be a quote-unquote real language since 1960, and it was not for another decade after that until linguists realized that this language of hands in space was an extraordinary window that they had never looked through before onto how all language, signed and spoken, works in the human mind.
But many signers, I can't speak for other sign languages, but many ASL signers also mouth spoken English while they're signing. And that seems to me, since ASL is not really just a sign version of English, seems to me to be almost the ultimate in split brain.
Well, there are different levels of signing, and there are these manufactured languages like signed English, signing exact English, invented for pedagogical use, and they do mirror the syntax of English. Those languages really are English on the hands, and so with them, you will see a lot of mouthing of English words. But with real sign language, no, you do sometimes see gestures of the mouth, and you very often see gestures of the face. They look to hearing people like radical facial expressions, and those, interestingly, are part of the grammar of the language. The face is actually transmitting additional grammar while the hands are busy talking.
Telling us whether it's in the past tense, you mean, or giving
something
nuance?
Like that. The difference between, for instance, a declarative statement and a question, an interrogative. The signing will be exactly the same. If you want to say the simple declarative sentence in ASL, father is home, it consists of two signs, father, home. ASL, like Russian and Hebrew, has no copula, no verb to be in the present tense. Now, if you want to turn that same sentence into a question, is father home? Well, in English, we do it partly with intonation. In sign language, the signing, the hands are doing the exact same thing. But if you look at the signer's face, the head is tilted, the eyebrows are raised, and that tells any fluent speaker of ASL, take what the hands are saying and turn it into an interrogative.
Still, I'd imagine that sign languages are much more limited in some ways. For example, in English, we have a lot of ambiguity, partly because so many different languages have fed into the English language. We have lots of homonyms that often have totally different meanings. In sign language, I'd imagine it's you can be much more specific.
Well, I think sign languages are capable of expressing anything that spoken languages are, and vice versa. Of course, sign languages are particularly good at expressing concepts in three-dimensional space because they're formed in space. But one of the raps against sign language for a long time was that it couldn't express abstraction. It was supposed to be this kind of crude, manual, doggerel, almost gibberish on the hands. And yet there are plenty of scholars, deaf linguists, for instance, who give papers at scientific meetings presented entirely in sign language on the most esoteric points of linguistic theory that you could ever imagine, and everyone understands them.
How do signers modify the meaning of a particular sign, like sickness? I'm feeling very sick, or I have a certain kind of sickness.
Again, one of the raps on sign language historically, and one of the reasons deaf people were made to feel they had a substandard language, or in fact no language, was sign language was believed for many years to have no grammar. In fact, in many ways, it has richer grammatical systems than English does. There are whole constellations of related words modulated for aspect, an adjective like sick, simply by changing the length or tension or duration of the movement of the sign, can take on a nuanced spectrum of meanings, meaning to be sick for a long time, to be very sick, prone to be sick, things that in English would require piling on many more words. Sign language can do it elegantly, but simply by modifying one sign.
But only understood by somebody who is fluent in the language.
Right, either a native deaf signer or a hearing person who has either acquired the language from deaf parents or who has studied it well.
My guest is Marguerite Fox of the New York Times. She's written a book called Talking Hands, which is published by Simon & Schuster. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Could a child who's not deaf but has trouble with language potentially have an easier time learning a sign language? For example, there has been a debate, I know, in the autistic world as to whether kids should be taught sign, and in the same, it's the same sort of thing that happened in the deaf community. Most people have voted against teaching sign because then the children will never have to learn how to speak.
Well, let me answer the second part of the question first. That has really changed with, first of all, the discovery in 1960 by a wonderful scholar at Gallaudet named Bill Stokey that ASL was a real language. That started to change deaf people's own attitudes toward their language. And then the Deaf Pride movement that came to a head in 1988 with the student protests at Gallaudet. So while there's a wide spectrum of feeling, and I don't want to refer to the deaf community as if it were a monolithic entity, there is much more pride in language than there used to be historically. And many deaf people now consider themselves not as a disabled population, but quite simply as a linguistic minority.
What about autism?
Well, again, I am not an expert in this field, and it would depend when you say a child having trouble with language. There are so many etiologies for language pathology, so many ways in which one could have trouble with language. So I strongly suspect it would depend on what the nature of the disturbance was.
Are languages, going back to Noam Chomsky, are languages learned the same no matter what? There's a certain amount of rote involved, a certain amount of memory involved, isn't there?
Well, this again was the fascinating thing. When linguists latched on to sign languages as this vital untapped resource for how the human mind learns language, one of the first things they studied was how do deaf children, deaf babies of native signing deaf parents acquire ASL. And remarkably, it's acquired in developmental stages that basically completely parallel those that the hearing child of hearing parents goes through acquiring spoken language.
You mentioned earlier that there are these other isolated communities around the world. I know there's one in Nicaragua. Do they develop similarly, even though obviously their sign languages would be unique to those communities?
The Nicaraguan situation, though fascinating, and it's been covered extensively, is slightly different because of the way the community evolved. There, an indigenous sign language developed when deaf children were brought together in state-run schools for the deaf for the first time after the Sandinista Revolution. And so you don't have an organic community. It's no less fascinating for that.
And it isn't really isolated.
No. There's one of the schools is in right in Managua. But what my scientists, I feel proprietary, I call them mine, what my scientists are studying is an organic signing village of the kind that existed on Martha's Vineyard 200 years ago. And in the last chapter of the book, I report on a conference that I had the great privilege of going to, where for the first time anywhere, all of the researchers studying signing villages were brought together under one roof. They met in the Netherlands last year. And when I say all the researchers in the world, I'm talking about a dozen people. Mm-hmm. But they are studying signing villages in Jamaica, on Bali, in Suriname, Ghana, and a number of other places.
And when they compare notes, did they find that they have a lot in common?
There are certain affinities. In most cases, the linguistic research in these villages is just barely beginning. So I think it will be a few years before they've all amassed enough data to truly compare notes. The work in Hesiod is the farthest along. And even now, there seem to be more signing villages tucked away in isolated pockets of the world than we know about. There are just now reports I read recently of something called Inuit Sign Language, which appears to be spoken in several isolated communities in the Canadian Arctic.
Do the people in Hesiod learn to read Arabic? Is there any real schooling?
Yes, the children go to school. One of the things
that's... And the deaf learn to read Arabic as well?
Well, one of the interesting things that's happening is the work of my linguists in the village is, in a sense, a race against time. Why? Because for the past number of years, the deaf children of the village have been bused to Israeli state-run schools for the deaf. And there, they are taught all day in a sort of version of signed Hebrew, with the teacher speaking either Hebrew or sometimes Arabic, accompanied by signs from Israeli sign language, which is totally different from their own. And guess what? The kids carry the signs home with them at night. So the linguists have already observed the young generation's language is permeated with Israeli words.
And that would mean that the language would become more complex, I assume.
Well, it's going to change, and then you can no longer control for questions of outside influence. Outside influence, because of the schooling of these deaf kids, is an inevitability.
I want to thank you so much for being with us today, Margaret Fox of the New York Times. Her fascinating book, Talking Hands, is published by Simon & Schuster.
Thank you very much, Leonard.